Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 93. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me. We are back in Las Vegas at where my mother has deemed the Boomer's Studio.
The Boomer's Studio.
Yeah,
I like that.
She has made it official for the very first show of 2017, a very rare non-event week, which is crazy. So that means it's wide open. And what better way to fill some conversation? I reached out to my man, Adam Hill, and fortunately we were lucky enough that you actually had some time on your schedule. We got you out. And not only that, we even just got you to have a little cocktail.
You did. I think after, like, New Year's Eve did not go well for me. It was a little crazy. So I figured it was going to be a while before I had another drink. But, you know, you guys, I have to at least try to keep up with you guys. I know the concept of the show. So I went with it.
That's awesome, man. Well, I did want to start right there because I did New Year's very low-key. My mom was in town to visit, so I actually just stayed home and cooked some food and watched it. I know that Cole Coffee here, you know, he's right under the base of the Stratosphere, so he's got fireworks in his backyard.
Yeah,
so I know
nice.
He wasn't planning on doing much, but if I recall correctly, there may have been a trip to Tijuana in your plans.
Well, maybe. Listen, the slogan, I guess, is what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's not true. We all know, like, nobody cares. Nothing bad happens in Vegas. It's good. What happens in San Diego and Point South, that I think that stays off the record for the most part.
Yeah, fair enough.
It didn't go well, but it, you know, it's always fun. It's a good time.
The stories that must have happened.
So what happened south of the border stays south.
Maybe Chula Vista. We were at Alliance consoling Dominic Cruz. That's where we went. I'm not going to say we went any further south than that.
That's hilarious. Well, I have heard some of these off-record conversations, so I'm going to make some assumptions of my own, Adam Hill.
Yeah, whatever you're assuming, it's probably way worse.
That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. All right, well, for those that don't know, and you should know by now, Adam Hill, Las Vegas Review Journal, coveringthecage.com is your kind of MMA-only site of Las Vegas Review Journal. Where's that at? Where are you guys heading into the new year? Is I know, you know, over the course of the years, they've kind of gotten in the game, gotten out of the game, varying levels of commitment, like I think a lot of you know, publications have done. Where do you guys stand? Is it full speed ahead in 2017?
Yeah, I think so. Like, we just had a bunch of staff movement the last, like, week and a half, 2 weeks. Actually, one of our more talented writers at the paper left, and there was some talk of me switching up and doing some other things, but I really lobbied hard to stay with MMA. I have some things I want to do in the journalism world, in the sports journalism world outside of this, but nothing really specific that I wanted to jump to. And I really feel like we're trying to build this brand of coveringthecage.com a little bit. We've got Heidi Fang, you know, I think one of the best in the business, and a lot of people know her. Just an awesome, awesome, not only person, but worker, and she's been doing some great
hard
things with
worker,
video.
Man, hard
yeah,
worker.
She works hard.
She does.
I mean, she's one I could definitely vouch for. Like, me and John Usley are the last people in a room, and Heidi, and this is not in terms of just speed, it's in terms of how much shit that she processes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've been in the grind with her behind the scenes, you know, a lot of post-fight stuff, so I'm always used to seeing Heidi, and she's never one that shies away from work. She works as hard as anybody in the business,
yeah.
And I've come to really appreciate working events with her by far. She's a grinder.
Yeah, and so we've got her, and she does great work, and, you know, I'm trying to, you know, plug away and keep doing what we're doing. So I feel like we're building the brand a little bit. We've been a little over a year. We started with the Ronda Rousey fight in Australia. So we're a little over a year, and
well,
you know,
you
have your ups and downs, and, you know, I felt like I was kind of at a point of like, oh, are we going to keep pushing ahead? Are we going to keep doing this? And I actually literally just as we were sitting here waiting to come out, I got an email from our online people that we had phenomenal numbers last week. And two of the videos in particular that Heidi did just went through the roof
on
our site. So I think people are pretty happy with that. We're pushing forward and, you know, hopefully keeping, you know, bringing you guys new and exciting content. I mean, you guys do obviously a great job, and there's some other people out there who do a great job. And we just try to keep keep people informed what's going on in the MMA world and try to bring it to you a little differently. Everybody tries to find, you know, the way to tell their stories, and hopefully we'll keep trying to do that. So right now, yeah, full steam ahead. We're going to keep pushing it with with covering the cage, and hopefully we can bring you more and exciting things in the new year.
That's awesome. We talked about kind of how busy this past weekend was. I definitely wanted to start kind of right there with you, because for those maybe that don't know, that don't hear local ESPN radio, you do a lot of local radio as well with Steve Cofield. And so I know for a fact that you've been following the mainstream fallout of Ronda Rousey and what's going on. And I wanted to get your take on it, man, because number one, you're a smart guy. Number two, I'm so inside the MMA bubble that sometimes I just get like, it's ridiculous to me that these people are weighing in. But I want to get your take on it, because everything I'm seeing that's coming from the mainstream, it seems like everybody's just kind of dogpiling on Ronda, saying that she was overrated, that she was a media product to begin with, she was never that good. And I can understand, I mean, there's always revisionist history, and I can understand a little bit of that, you know, trying to take down what she accomplished. But I guess what you're more into mainstream covering media and mainstream sports and that sort of thing. I don't know. I guess I'm just – like, I feel weird that everybody even has a damn opinion. It's just – I mean, I feel like people are just weighing in because a producer told them to have an opinion because it'll get views.
No, I don't even think it's that. I mean, I think there's a part of that. But also – and by the way, if you want to throw just a Ronda Rousey general topic out like that to me, you guys might want to go order dinner. Sit, have your dinner, and then maybe have a couple drinks.
Come on, I can talk
about Ronda and her and the coverage of her and everything that goes on around her for an hour at least nonstop. But I don't think it's people just saying, "Hey, have a take." I think people generally got interested and involved in her story. There's no question about it, and that's a good thing, no matter what. I mean, it was good when eyeballs were coming to the sport. It was good when, hey, this girl Ronda Rousey's fighting. Okay, I'm gonna watch this. Even though I know people got frustrated in the MMA world before. Like, oh, you're just tuning in because Ronda Rousey's fighting. I don't understand that attitude. Yeah, that's good. That's what you want.
Yeah, right.
And then you have these cards around her, and then people are like, oh, wow, hey, this fighter. Like, and you have
Cody
in Australia.
Garbrandt.
Cody, yeah, or, on the, yeah, this last card, you see Cody. When you're in Australia, oh, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, even though it wasn't her best performance.
Yeah.
All right, hey, I saw that girl. She was awesome. I saw somebody on the undercard who fought really well. Like, I think Robert Whittaker might have fought really well on that card. Oh, that guy. I'm going to follow that guy's career. So when you have mainstream eyes tuning in, it's never a bad thing, but you also get these instant reactions from people who have no idea what they're talking about, and you just have to deal with it. Like, I'm frustrated by it too. I saw Shannon Sharpe today just go on this rant about being overrated, like how overrated Ronda Rousey was.
Wow. Seems so bizarre.
Dude, you've never watched a fight.
That's
how do you
ridiculous.
Even know? How do you know that she's overrated? You couldn't say anything about her. You want to break down the fact that she's in a bad training camp with a coach that has no idea what he's doing and that he may have ruined her career. Like, he knows none of these things. And there's a lot of depth and intricacy to how you talk about this subject that these mainstream people don't know about, but I don't get mad about it. I just look at it and say, at least they're talking about it, and maybe it brings more eyes to it down the road. I don't think it will. I think this is, hey, Ronda's done, and we're not going to talk about this anymore, but at least there's some focus on the sport. You know, I saw a lot of this take. I saw the anti-Ronda takes, and then I also saw, and I wish I could remember, there was two different mainstream sports media people that I saw that said, I don't see Amanda Nunes ever losing.
Wow.
And I'm just like, you saw her fight one time. She just lost last year.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, is part of this a product of the fact that it seems like we have to rush to say something is the best ever, the greatest ever? You know what I mean?
Hashtag hot takes. I mean, that's what it is. It's, oh, if you have to say something crazy.
Because even in Ronda's buildup, you couldn't just say, like, oh, my God, it's amazing what she's doing. She's pioneering for the sport. Who will be the one to stop her? We had to, like, rush to this, you know, she's the greatest female athlete ever and that sort of stuff.
But it's also the world – it's the world that we're living in, and it sucks and it's obnoxious, but it's also what we all do. And so, you know, when you're on – so on Fox Sports – I think it was on Fox Sports when they had Michael Rapaport on, which, you know, actor – well, I don't know if he's done comedy. I know he does fantasy football show.
Yeah. I think of him from the Howard Stern show where he's
a somewhat funny guy at times. And they had him on to talk about Ronda Rousey. I know he's a fight fan, and he watches it. But I don't know if you saw his take on it or not. But he said she got, quote, white girl privilege by not having to get all the way knocked out. And the ref stopped it early because of, quote, white girl privilege.
What the?
And he never would have allowed somebody else to get. And he goes, John Lineker was getting his ass beat worse. And they didn't stop that because he's not a white boy. Like, what are you even talking about? I had no idea what it even meant. But guess what happened? Everybody started talking about this take. It was on, you know, all the sports shows. It was everybody's like, hey, did he know what he was talking about? Was this, you know, was this a crazy thing to say? Was it over the top? Now, not only does he have that take, now everybody starts talking about that show. Now they start, you know, bringing him views because they talk about that. Then they bring him Twitter followers. Then whatever show that was that he was on, which I think was Speak for Yourself on Fox Sports 1. I'm not sure if it was one of the other ones. Now everybody starts watching that show because, oh, that's where that crazy hot take came from. It is the hot take society, and it sucks, and I don't like it. But there's a lot of things about, you know, journalism that I don't like.
Yeah.
And that are, you know, that are extreme. You know, I'll go. We do this a lot. We do media talk, and when I come on with you a lot, we do that. And it's just because I, you know, from a mainstream media background, you have it as
well.
Yeah,
I like it.
But I will not write about salaries, and I will not write about suspensions.
So you don't even write the purses just because you know they're not the actual purses?
I mention them, but I get so annoyed because either way, people are like, so Ronda Rousey got a reported $3 million.
Right.
For those that know, that's not what she made.
She probably made 10.
Right. But so you put out $3 million. And you get some people saying, wow, she got $3 million and this person only got $150,000. Well, no, she didn't get $3 million and that person didn't get $150,000. She got a lot more. That person might have got $175,000, whatever they got.
Right.
But the numbers are not real. They're not real. All they are, to me, is you saying, here's a disclosed income. And you're telling that to people, and people just run with it, and they don't actually read the story. They don't hear what you say. And I'm probably sacrificing clicks, and I'm probably not getting the people to click on it. But I don't want to do that because I don't think it's a real number. And now there is some investigative work to do of what people actually make. All those things are really legitimate news stories. But when you tell somebody that Ronda Rousey made $3 million to the fight, that's what they go with.
They don't
read the rest of the story where even, you know, you guys, when you write the story and say it's $3 million, and I write the story and I say she made $3 million disclosed, that's just what people go with. They don't get to the fourth paragraph that says, by the way, she also gets a cut of pay-per-view. She gets, you know, whatever bonus they're going to pay her for this. And nobody actually knows what the number is. So I just hate doing it. Now, is that probably not doing my job the best to my ability? Probably. But that's just how I feel about it. And the other one is the suspensions, which really bother me.
Because you get a six-month term and all you need is a doctor to say, no, you're good.
And so people freak out about it. They're like, suspended? Like, what? And they don't even look at medical suspension. Like, she got suspended. What did she do?
Right.
Yeah.
It's a common thing. It's just a safety precaution because back in the day, there was no registry, and you would just have people fight and then go fight another town, and nobody would know about it. So we just have this registry that, okay, until there's a doctor checkout, you can't do this. And it's not a real thing. And I understand that when we write the stories, we say medical suspension, she's got to get checked, and we actually give you the background, but people don't read it. And then it just becomes this whole thing. And when the first time I remember is for Rousey in Australia, where they issued a suspension, I think it was 6 months, and people just freaked out. And I remember getting calls from my editors like, she got a six-month suspension. I'm like, well, what was she going to fight tomorrow? She got knocked out. What are you talking about? That's not a real thing, but people love it. And so it just gets very frustrating in that. But that's, again, that's
good
that's
for you for taking
hot
a stand,
takes. Yeah, but at some point, I'm probably not doing – I'm not serving my employer the best by doing that, but I just feel like you're serving – now – the best thing to do as far as not covering salaries, what you should do is talk to everybody, find out what they're actually making, get the real numbers out there. But you can't – nobody will talk about that.
Right.
And you can't actually get the numbers. So you're never going to really report the truth. And to me, that's what it's about. So I don't like doing it. But that's where we're in the – everything has to be a hot take and a headline and a flashy thing. And I get it. And I participate in it to a level. But those are just two little things in the sport that really drive me nuts. And I won't do it. And the reason we brought this up, I wanted to get to the suspension thing because I saw it flashed on all the mainstream places where it's like,
sure,
Ronda Rousey's knocked out, Ronda Rousey got suspended.
Sure.
Like, what's the context to that? There's actual, like, there's stories to that, but on the national site, when you get the national coverage of MMA, that's what you hear. $3 million, 45 days, she got knocked out in 48 seconds. So there's no real in-depth, like, coverage of it. Hopefully at one point we get to that where we have NFL-like shows where we're breaking down. I saw on NFL Live, I think it was a 7-minute breakdown from 9 different guys about the New York Giants receivers going on the trip to Miami on their off day. And it was like every angle covered, every single thing you could talk about, and like they broke it down to the second. But like in MMA, it's like boom, 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 here it is. And the hot take, and we'll get it out there, and that's it. Ronda Rousey's overrated. She was never that good. Let's go. And that's it. And that's all it's boiled down to. So hopefully it gets to a different point where we cover it on we obviously covered the intricacies sure. like that, but you know, where the mainstream, that if they're going to talk about it, they actually break it down and they actually have people that understand it. I mean, that's the other thing, is that you've got Shannon Sharp talking about it and you've got Michael Rapaport talking about it to the national audience that know nothing.
Well, I mean, yeah. I guess if there's any positive to take out of it all, I guess the only positive that I did see was at least I guess some of these were FS1 products. So here were FS1 products openly criticizing something in the UFC, which I think to this point everything's been very kid gloves with
the
UFC, right?
Yeah, because the contract's almost up. Because they might not have it anymore. They might not have the contract anymore, so they gotta start being critical.
Don't treat you with the kid gloves anymore.
Yeah, although you would think that if you're trying to save the contract, you would probably be even nicer. But you know, the point is yeah. that
they could probably be worse about it. I mean, granted, they're just talking about Ronda. They're not saying the UFC's done the worst thing ever or anything. But it's interesting you talk about that because it just made me think about, because I haven't really searched to try to see what some of these other guys, and here's first thing I pull up, Ronda Rousey and ESPN. Here's another cat, this Jonathan Coachman guy who used to be an analyst for WWE. Now he's seeing how Ronda's broke and no interest to the WWE, yada yada yada. And just, it's crazy. It's like any direction, any search can pull up something that just sends you down a rabbit hole. Because now I went to his Twitter and started reading other people chiming in. I saw what you said about how somebody else was like, oh, dude, her last two fights, she's never really been that great. The dude's retweeting it like, yes, thank you for validating my statement, random fan. I mean, that is just crazy. So I can understand why, just to go back to
why. I mean, is that what Ronda's saying? Because this is what trips me out. Is Ronda, you know, the media turn. Now, first of all, anytime you hear something from Dana's mouth, you got to remember, sometimes he doesn't always get things exactly right.
There's a
filter.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes he doesn't say things exactly like he means to say them. But I never understood that. Like, I never bought into that the media turned on her. But I don't know. When you see stuff like that,
it's funny. Now it has.
Right.
It has now.
Yeah. Now it has.
Because
I agree.
Well, because she went from not talking before, which I actually came around on, and I was like, I kind of like this.
Right.
But then not talking after, it's like, okay, she doesn't owe it to anybody.
Yeah.
But you're going to get this. There's no question about it. But I did want – when he made his comment, the media turned on her and she felt the media turn. I really did want to ask him, and I will, I think, when I talk to him at some point. But he's still pretty sensitive about it because, listen, they're close. They're much more friendly than most fighters and than he is with most fighters. And I saw he got a little upset at Brett for a question the other day, Brett Okamoto from ESPN. So I think it's still a little sensitive. But when it comes down, I want to say – who were the people that turned on her? Because I still thought, listen, the MMA media, for what it is, I think still appreciated everything that she did, still thought she was at the top of her, you know, not the top of her game because she had the aura of invincibility knocked off, but still thought she was a great fighter, still thought everything that she did
for the sport. I picked her in the damn fight.
So did I.
Yeah.
I admit it.
I was right about Cody Garbrandt as well.
So I don't know where they turned. I mean, obviously there were some people on Twitter that, you know, mocked her and made fun of her, but that's not media.
Right.
And that's not the people that she's going to face at a press conference setting. And if she wanted to do, you know, even a reduced, like, hey, I'm only letting these
even
five
invite
people,
only.
Yeah,
exactly.
If she wanted to do that, that's fine. Like, I understand there's a lot of you know, outside the norm people that are at some, you know, typical UFC media day, that kind of thing. So I understand if you want to get – you don't want to get some crazy things thrown at you, but you know, there is responsible members of the MMA media that I think just wanted to hear what she had to say, just wanted to hear where her mindset was.
What's your focus been?
Right.
And
those questions, listen, those questions are at times kind of pointless, but it does give you some thought into where her mind is, what she's thinking, and whether she wants to be honest about it or not, that's her prerogative.
Right.
But, you know, and again, I came around at the end and I said, you know, I think this is cooler to not talk about it, just go in.
It sounds weird, but I did too.
Yeah, and at first I was like, what do you mean? Because it makes our job harder and we're being selfish and it sucks. Oh, you're not going to talk to us. What the hell? This sucks. But then, you know, I was like, this is cool. Like, she's just going to come out and not talk to anybody and do it. But I do think you have to talk after the fight.
That's the thing. I think everybody wanted a little bit of closure. If you want to do whatever and say it's because of fight week and you want to stay focused, you're coming back, I think everybody appreciated that. And if you didn't, you know, she's going in there to fight. I give her that, but you got to give something afterwards. If we played the game for you in the first place, at least give us an insight, give us a chance to come back and ask a little questions, even how you're feeling right now. Generally, maybe we just want to know, you know. Yeah. I think it's probably a lot easier to say media in general, because when you have so many of these other random media outside of it, and granted, they haven't been saying MMA media turned on us.
Right.
They just said media in general. I think there's a lot of people out there realize there's so many people trying to get clicks. I mean, we see that every day from – our bigger, you know, overall parent company, if you will, or whatever you want to call it, people want to click on the Ronda stuff. They want to click on the Conor stuff. So everybody's got eyeballs on it. But let's be real. The MMA media hasn't changed. And I think most of us have seen her come up from Strikeforce and whatever. And John, even before that.
I was at, like, her
that.
Second amateur fight. Yeah, I talked to her after the fight. I mean, I've covered her from the beginning. I've had great conversations with her.
You think there'd be some trust there.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying – I'm not being selfish saying me. Like, a lot of people have been there since the beginning and understand her and understand how she thinks and operates and just want to – just want to talk to her. And you don't know what she doesn't know anything to us, the media, at all, but to the fans to even talk to them, you know. And she puts out a statement, but you don't see her feelings and her emotions.
That's what I want to touch on. The statement, I mean, God bless, I guess something went out there, but is there one word in there that she wrote herself?
I don't think so.
I mean, I want to say thank you to all my fans who have been there for me in not only the greatest moments, but the most difficult ones. Words cannot convey how much your love and support means to me. Returning to not just fighting but winning was my entire focus this past year. However, sometimes, even when you prepare and give everything you have and want something so badly, it doesn't work how you planned. I take pride in seeing how far the women's division has come in UFC and commend all the other women who have been part of making this possible, including Amanda. I need to take some time to reflect and think about the future. Thank you for believing in me and understanding. There's not one. That, I mean, dude, that is PR boilerplate, like, 101, right? Like, and I'm not, God, whoever did put that out for it, good. But that, I mean, come on, that's not Ronda Rousey.
Did that come out with her Twitter account, or where'd that come out?
She sent that through Ramona Shelburne.
I was going to say, because I'm looking on her stuff, and it's still showing stuff from, like, December
29th. She issued it directly to Ramona Shelburne of ESPN.
Gotcha.
Okay. I'm not saying it. Even if she wanted to come out and read that, I thought it would have been, like, you can at least see her emotions, see her feelings. And again, it's not us. And she doesn't owe anything to the fans necessarily either. But on some level, like, yeah, they do want to see from you. They do want to hear from you. And, by the way, if you don't like the fact that the media, unquote, quote unquote, turned on you, or the fans turned on you with all this mockery, guess what? You go out and you stand there and you read a statement, or you talk honestly about how much you're hurting or how much this sucks. I think a lot of that stuff goes away because they're like, whoa, this is a real person.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
It humanizes
it's like,
her.
For instance, Michael Venom Page put out that video the other day, right? Do the Ronda Rousey or whatever, where he's like doing this video. I think everybody turned on MVP. It's basically a video of him like doing a little dance
snapping his
head back.
Oh,
like he's getting punched. He's like, do the Rousey. And it's like, I'm sure he thought that was the funniest thing ever. I feel like most people that saw it were like, bro. Well, that's kind of shit.
And I think most people are like, who are you?
Right.
Like, I mean, I think he's great, and I think he's going to be a star. But, like, bro, like, what have you reached? Like, she changed the sport. What have you done?
I mean, to see – I'm not saying that I want to see Ronda in tears or whatever else, but when you see that real human emotion from somebody, I mean, I think that makes you want – your heart goes out for them a little bit, right?
Yeah, completely. I feel that. And, listen, again, it's all I think all of this comes across as – people listening to and saying we're whining that she didn't talk to us or we didn't get our stories. I'm sure that's what people think, but I'm telling you, it's what's always been done. And not that there's a right way and a wrong way, but like the way Dominic Cruz did it was amazing. Listen, I am a sore loser, and there's not even a question about that. Like competing growing up in sports, I was the worst. Like my parents wouldn't even talk to me after I lost something. And even now, if we went and played like mini golf right now, and I lost like on the last hole, like I was trying to hit it in the clown's mouth and I missed, and that cost me the round, I will flip on you. You ask me about it, I will be a lunatic.
Right.
But at least you'll see that I'm angry and I'm feeling it and I'm emotional about it. And people will be like, he handled that terribly. And I probably did. But guess what? That I'm just explaining to you how I feel and what I'm going through. And you can understand that and you get that. And again, not that she owes anybody anything ever. She has left her mark, whether she ever talks to another person again or steps in the cage again. She has changed the sport and changed everything about the history of the sport. Doesn't owe anyone anything, but I think just fans wanted to see that, and fans wanted, and I think that's part of why it became so easy to go after her on social media, because you don't have that humanizing thing. She
absolutely,
gone.
You're not. There's no relationship.
She was cross state line by the time the press conference.
It's
started.
Easy to trash her now. Here's what I wonder too. Okay, so now we haven't really had a conversation with her in 14 months, right? I mean, since before UFC 193, we haven't talked to her. So I feel like anything we say here is a guess, but. Factoring in how well this fight did, and we don't know the numbers yet, but from all accounts, it easily cleared 1 million pay-per-view buys. The preliminary ratings were incredible indicators, and it sounds like everybody's happy. The arena at T-Mobile was sold out. It was huge. I mean, this was a big deal for everybody. Do you think she fights again? Because I mean, I don't see her going back out there against Amanda Nunes. I don't see her going back out there, you know, and fighting number 15 in the division either. But what if they came up with, hey, fight at 145. Go for this title at 145 now that this exists. I mean, do you think that she might do it again? Because financially, it seems like it was still incredibly viable.
Yeah, I don't think the 145 would have. I mean, maybe she wanted to go fight home. I just don't think that's the right fight for her either. Listen, what do I want? What would my ideal thing be for her? I absolutely want her to stay around, and that's selfish because we want to cover her and we want to see her fight. It's big business for the sport. I think she does take a huge step back. Obviously, switches camps. I mean, I'm not even going to address if she stays in the city, whatever.
But we'll see.
I know. I hope.
She's loyal to a
fault. Ideal, what I would do. I know, and you have to give her some credit for that, but it's also there comes a time where you just have to be like, okay, no more of this. But ideally, I'd like to see her switch camps. Even if you want to say that Edmund is a good coach or he's done well for her career and got her to this point, it's in every sport where it comes a time when the message gets stale. And when it's one coach and one voice all the time, like, you're not scouting yourself. And we talk about this in other sports because, like you said, I do cover other sports. And you talk about the fact that, yeah, even if a coach is a coach for a long time in the NFL and he's successful, even Bill Belichick brings in other assistants and people that can scout your own team to watch you and say, hey, this is what we see from the outside. This is what you're doing wrong. You have to scout yourself. So even if she was just to go somewhere just to have them pick her apart and say, hey, you're doing this wrong, to get different voices in there. It's him running the camp and him being the voice all the time. And I think even if you're going to say he's the best coach in the world, I think there comes a time where you reach a level where you need to have other voices. So I'd like to see her go somewhere else, train at a different camp, take a long training camp, like, you know, 4 or 5 months at least, say, I'm going to come back and I'm going to fight somebody with somebody who's not just an aggressive striker like Amanda Nunes is. I don't even want to throw a name, just somebody like 8-12 range and say, get a win, go out there, get a win. Even if you dominate somebody, go out there and get a win, get your confidence back, and let's build you back up to that level. Instead of, you're not fighting for titles right away anymore. You don't have to throw you in a main event. You can be the second or third fight down on a card. And just
feel
and
like
build yourself back
so
up.
She so wants to be the headliner. She so wants to be
and
the
I
title
think,
fight.
And that's great, but build yourself back up to that level. I mean, if you go out, I'd like to say if you go out and get just dominated again, then it's completely over. But I don't know that you would be really want to fight anymore after that anyway. But, I mean, that's my ideal path for her. Obviously, if she came back and she wants to be a main event fighting for a title, that's happening. Like, she can do whatever she wants. But I would love to just see her try to rebuild her confidence, rebuild her game, go somewhere else to work on it, and just build back up to that. I would love to see her even stepping out, not even be the main event, not have to worry about that kind of spotlight, although wherever she goes, the spotlight's going to be on her, but just focus on get in there, get some wins, and get back to that level. I think it would be great, and I think it would be good for her and good for everybody, but I don't think she wants to take that kind of time either.
That's the tough thing. What about you, Cole Coffey? I mean, you and I talked about it a little bit on the and a half episode this past weekend, but now that we've had a couple days to let it soak in, I mean, there were a lot of storylines right after 207, but I feel like in the days since – it's been all Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, for
Where
sure.
Where are you standing, man? Do you think she's done? Do you want her to be done?
I don't want her to be done. I guess I'm kind of like Adam, too. Maybe that's more selfish. Anything else, I love what she brings to the fight game, even though this fight week kind of lacked everything that I loved about what Ronda brings to a fight week, because all it really brought was maybe a little bit more extra views on some videos that, you know, even then we didn't really get whatever. But, again, there's the selfish side of it, you know. I think – at least now with women's sports, so many other names kind of have helped to fill some of the void. Will they ever be to Ronda's level? Not anytime soon, but, you know, at least in terms of bringing sort of legitimacy, I think, to the women's bantamweight division, which at one point a lot of people questioned whether they were, you know, whether it was worth being around or whatever. I think we've gone way beyond that point. Now I think they're looking at a lot of the women in there, and they're all studs, and I think a lot of people came around to understand that it's a legitimate division with some legitimate badasses. You know, so I think the need for there to be that overall person that used to carry it on their shoulders, I don't think it needs to be on any one particular person's shoulder anymore now. I think it's easy to now it's kind of be able to spread out among some of the characters. I looked up that Venom page. Are you sure he's talking about Ronda? Because that Ronda, he says, has an H. R-H-O-N-D-A.
Rahonda.
So I'm sorry, Michael. I cleared that up for you. I know you weren't talking about Rousey, so I'll take that off the books for you. I would love to see her back. And it's funny, I love how you were talking about some of the people that I'd love to see or who you think she'd come back with. you know, looking at some of these names, you know, what was crazy, because at one point, you know, there were so many people that everybody was like, oh, nobody can get in there. You know, nobody's able to defend it. Now a lot of people have came up. You know, there's that Kat Zingano, mm-hmm. who's number 6 in the UFC rankings. I think that would be a good fight. I think Kat would jump on it. I think what's tough
– here's what's now crazy. Like, Juliana Pena is probably the number one contender in the division right now, unless you say Shevchenko's the number one contender. She actually matches up pretty good with Ronda, I think. I mean, at least there's not the devastating knockout.
She does, but
– fear.
You know, and it's tough. It's crazy because, you know, now with Ronda, UFC has her ranked at number 4. You know, but with the kind of money that she – demands to put her in there, mm-hmm. you got to keep it up towards the top. You got to keep it towards a main. You got to keep a co-main. You know, you can't put Ronda 4 fights down, you know, or even 5 fights down. You know, there's no way to do it. You know, but do you want to throw her in front of – I wouldn't even want to put her in front of Sarah McMahon right now. The way that Sarah McMahon's fighting, which I think it would be a good one, but the way Sarah is right now and the way Ronda is right now, I wouldn't want to give her Sarah.
All right, here's the one. She would destroy Raquel Pennington.
Yes.
She would destroy
That's another one I was
thinking.
And
listen, I love Raquel Pennington. I think
so
she's awesome. And the way that she is, her career has taken off and she's worked so hard, that's great. I'm making Ronda a minus 1,000 favorite against Raquel Pennington. Stylistically, I think she kills her. So, That would be a good one.
And that's up towards the top where I think you kind of need it for – because, let's face it, Ronda's got to be up towards the top. For the kind of money that she's got to be on the bill. She's got to be towards the top, but it's tough. 2 losses now, you know, and then if you don't want to put her up against the number 1, the 2, the number 3, and it's hard to put her on that. But regardless, that's all for somebody much smarter than me to decide and whatever. But I do want Ronda to stick around. I'm sure she's not going to stick around.
Numbers on Fox.
She will. I mean, that's the thing. You know, I guess what's crazy is, you know, I loved watching, you know, getting hit up by random friends, random family that got into watching Ronda, like, oh, I want to watch this girl. And then you're right, when it would have went a long way if she would have said something after the fight, you know, to keep the whole human factor, because I even saw them start to get a little bit
absolutely
a little bit bent and like, oh, well, why is she acting like that, why is she this? And I'm like, oh shit, this is not a hardcore fan, this is not somebody that has a reason to hate her, or a reason, it's not like they're hating on her. But that's how quickly that public perception sways so easily for people on the fringe. And the littlest thing, by even just coming out and reading a statement, even if she went and said, I'm not taking questions from you guys, here's my statement, and then I'm going to leave, would have went 100,000 times further than completely ignoring the situation. If she was up there wearing sunglasses, never addressed anybody, you know, and just...
Oh, can you imagine?
It would have went so far... I mean, one, I think we wanted to see that she was still emotionally invested into it, as opposed to, I'm just going to come fight this fight, get my money, and go, and I never want to talk to you guys. Because then it's like, oh, okay, are you really into
it? It just seems short-sighted, not only for her fighting career, but even if she wants to act or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like she, as you said, even casual fans are kind of like, ooh, this chick, man, I don't know about her.
Yeah, because I think now a lot of people are saying she's, you know, and white girl entitled, you know, all this random shit that they want to put to some factor that they're building up in their heads, where if they at least could see it, I think they
that
could
stoppage
relate
was perfect,
it.
By the way, her Dean.
Oh yeah,
that was
ridiculous. If anybody thought it should have went further, I was calling for it before that. When she was stumbling, walking, that was just for the fact that she's an athlete, has incredible balance from her judo days, that she was literally, I think, was pretty much knocked out on her feet for a couple punches before it ever got in that thing. I think she was. She's fit enough that she was coming back into consciousness, but she was out, man. She was out. It was
done.
I was thinking it could have been stopped before that. But
by the way, the perception that is on Ronda now is that she's a sore loser and angry and all this stuff. And if you, I think it was more just crushed and sad, and I think it would have come across because.
Yes.
Did you guys saw the picture? I think it was TMZ got of her hugging a fan.
No.
At the MGM.
Uh-uh.
And I don't even know where this came from. I just saw it. I saw it on Twitter, so I could just be completely making this up. But I saw a picture like. Leaving the MGM of a fan like running up to the SUV and like she like reached out and hugged her and just was like devastated. And I said that emotion right there of Ronda, like that was what people wanted to see of like, hey, you care about this. You're sad. We get it.
Yeah.
Like you're not being angry and pouty like you're being portrayed now.
Yeah.
We know who you are. We've known you forever. We know how you're feeling. Like just explain it to people. And you don't have to always be the badass. Like you can be vulnerable and sad too. Like, I just think she just made a huge mistake.
I think the fans, if anything, I think a lot of them bought ownership in the fact that they loved the Ronda story, and I think a lot of them were let down because they didn't have a way to – they wanted to kind of grieve with her, I think. If they would at least saw her and
in pain – great way to say it.
They could have a way to kind of deal with what they're dealing themselves, and I think a lot of people right now are confused. They're like, I don't know what to think about it right now. I'm upset for her, and then to see some of those fringe people kind of just deal with these emotions, I think it would have been a lot better for them if they just could all see Ronda in pain. They could understand that she's upset. They could deal with their own upsetness. And instead of lashing out, I think a lot of soreness just turned to anger and is misdirected at her, where really they're just upset because an idol, someone that they actually grown to appreciate and whatever for what we're, you know, feel like that's a friend that they know because they've grown up kind of watching her become this superstar. So everybody feels like they have a piece of Ronda. They all own a little piece. So I think they wanted a little closure.
Absolutely.
After that. And when they didn't get it, they lashed out. And it's misguided. And I think all of them, they'll come back. You know, everybody's going to love on Ronda if she comes back. And she probably will. Do I think she might fight once a year if she's even coming back. I could see her coming back, but it's not going to be for a while.
I'm glad that this is the conversation, though, instead of the fact that I got both title fights so unbelievably wrong. I'm glad that this is the top four.
I went 0-2 as well, by the way. I had a horrible card.
Not even close.
Well, part of it, I'm if there's a Buckeye fighting, I'm really bad. And I know you'll appreciate this because I know you don't like the Buckeyes.
Yes, that's true.
But I like
the Clemson game.
Oh, dude, that was painful.
What an ale.
Painful. I know. I was going to say, well, you lost, but you guys lost a lot closer than we did. Ours was absolutely shit-faced ridiculous. I actually thought Michigan was going to be closer to what Clemson did to us, but can never account for what Clemson did. So now part of me is kind of hoping that Clemson wins it out just so I can feel like, oh, well, at least we lost the eventual.
The
and if you guys don't know who I'm talking about the Ohio State Buckeyes, of course. But, yeah, my team got their shit handed to them badly. Badly. I was throwing in the towel a little bit before that. I was like, I got to change this game. This was super, super painful. But I don't know. Yeah. Now I'm all out of
totally
it.
He threw him off his game. Look, that was so awesome.
You don't have to talk to the media now after that
totally
after that beating.
I know. I was
totally
I have a prepared
apart.
Statement right now that I'd like to read.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, you know, the last thing I'll say is I will say that I'm going back and watching the fight with Rousey. She did try to clinch more than I actually thought she did. Now, it was a great effort.
It was after she had already taken shots and she just reached.
Yeah, it wasn't the
it looked like me trying to clinch. Like, after, like if I was there, like, oh, I'm going to try to clinch with somebody. Like, it was, I mean, the one was early.
Right.
One was pretty early, and she got close to her, but she was already so out. Just like the home fight where she took an early shot, and when she did try to get close, although in the home fight she did eventually get her down,
right.
But I think she was still kind of staggered even when on the ground. And this one, she took shots early. She tried to clinch, but it was so easy for Amanda to shake her off because Ronda didn't have her full faculties about her at the time.
Yeah. Not at all. I'll tell you what.
I have to go back and watch it. I haven't rewatched it yet.
Yeah.
I wonder if I'll think of it differently.
I definitely didn't think much different about it, but I did admit I was like, okay, she did try more for the clinch than
I've watched it five more times, but they were all with the coach audio.
Oh, wow.
Which is,
of course,
very
exciting. Did you switch corners? That's one of the neatest things that you showed me about the fight pass is going back and watching shit from the different corner things. It's amazing when you pay attention.
I've just watched from Ronda's
to what they say. Yeah.
head movement, clinch.
Credit to him. He tried to direct.
Oh, man. Well, the fact that we can sit here and talk this long about one fighter and one fight goes to show that she is intriguing. She is interesting. And I hope that she'll be back. So, all right, listen, we got a few more things I want to get to, but before we do that, and so we can get all reset, make sure everybody's good here and taken care of on Frosty Beverages, maybe even Adam Hill will partake of a second cocktail, which is not something we see him do very often, while we figure all that out. I had a chance to speak earlier today with Yair Rodriguez, who we'll see in action next week in Phoenix, Arizona, facing UFC Hall of Famer BJ Penn in the first main event of the year. What I'll admit is a bizarre matchup that I never saw coming. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that next week. But let's get a little teaser of that right now and listen to Yair Rodriguez. Yair, how are you doing today?
Good, man. What about you?
I'm doing very well. It's good to talk to you, man. I appreciate the time.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about this fight, first of all, Yair. I mean, the matchup with BJ Penn, a little bit unexpected. I don't think, you know, anybody really saw this fight coming together. So just explain to us, How did this fight come together? Did you ask for it? Did the UFC come to you? How did this fight happen?
So it's something that they asked me in the interview before this one. You know, BJ is saying that I asked for this fight, and I never asked for this fight. You know, I don't know who told them that. They just offered me the fight. The UFC just offered me the fight, and I said yes to it. So here we are, preparing ourselves to get in a war January 15th, you know. So I don't know who told BJ that I was asking for the fight, but no, he's wrong.
That's interesting, because I had actually heard the same thing, that you wanted this fight, but there's just no truth to that at all.
No, it's not true, man. I never asked for this fight. I actually never knew that he was coming back from his retirement, you know, until the UFC offered me the fight. So here I am, fighting BJ.
Interesting. Well, how about when they came to you? I mean, when they came to you with the name BJ Penn, were you excited? Were you a little – I mean, I'm sure you had to kind of wonder a little bit, because, as you said, you didn't know he was coming back. But what was your initial reaction when they said, we'd like you to fight BJ Penn?
I mean, I was pretty surprised, you know, at the beginning. I was like, all right, man, fighting BJ Penn is a pretty big deal. You know, he's already 2 times world champion in two different weight classes. So he just makes it a pretty big deal for me, pretty big test for my career, you know. And I accepted at the moment that they told me, you know, I saw it a good opportunity for me to be tested by the UFC, you know. And see if they want to hear me, you know, the title shot soon or not. You know, I just think this fight put me in a good position, you know, for that title shot if I win. For now, I'm just preparing for this fight. You know, I'm focused on this fight. I don't see more than January 15 for now. All my concentration and all my energy is for this fight. And after this one, I want to start worry about what is coming next.
No doubt. Had you, I know, of course, you had trained at Jackson's and he came out there a little bit. Had you guys ever trained together or crossed paths before?
Yes. I trained with him once. It was just like one round or two rounds, you know, of just shadow boxing, moving pretty easy, nothing hard, you know, with him, just doing basically technique. And, you know, I was pretty happy to meet him. You know, he didn't know me back then. He actually thought that I was like Middle Eastern guy or something, you know, because he asked me where I was from. So I'm Mexican. He was like, oh, you look like Middle Eastern or something, like Indian or something. I was like, no, man, I'm Mexican. Oh, man, oh, good, good. And, you know, he's a nice guy. You know, he's a pretty nice guy. I respect him a lot. I used to watch him growing up. And now that I have this, you know, this shot fighting, it's just amazing for me.
That's awesome. How do you avoid that moment? I mean, once you know, of course, everybody in the sport respects BJ Penn. I mean, the guy is a legend. But, you know, when you get in there in the cage, he's just another opponent. So how do you avoid having that moment where you're a little bit starstruck or, you know, maybe you're sitting there going, oh, my gosh, I'm in the octagon with BJ Penn?
I don't think that's going to happen, bro. I've been in, you know, in the sport since I was 5 years old, so I don't get surprised. Whoever is in front of me, I don't care. It's, for me, it's one more opponent, and that's it. You know, I respect him the same way I respect my last opponents. It isn't going to be more. It isn't going to be less. It's going to be the same way, and then I'm going to treat him the same way as I treat my opponents, you know, with a lot of respect, but I will fight him hard. I will fight him with my life.
Very cool, man. Talk, you know, headlining here. This is another big opportunity for you. What did you take, Yair? Did you learn any lessons last time headlining, just about, you know, how to handle the fight week pressure, the media, or anything like that? Were any lessons you took out of that experience?
Yeah, I mean, about the media and all the stuff, you know, it was like a lot of traveling last time, a lot of doing this and doing that. But, you know, it's what it takes. It's what it takes to be in the UFC, and as you're growing inside the UFC is what it takes, you know. You gotta suck it up. If not, it's gonna consume you, it's gonna eat you. So now I don't care. I mean, bring it on. I don't care. So if I have to do interviews all day, I don't care. I will train at 3 in the morning, 3 AM, 4 AM. I don't care. You know, so for now I'm cool doing interviews, doing whatever it takes, you know, to be a champion. And once I'm champion, I'll do what it takes to keep being the champion. And you know, I'll do what it takes.
Very cool. I know, you know, you mentioned being, you know, a Mexican fighter. I feel like you're slowly becoming the face of Mexican MMA. But, you know, with Cain Velasquez getting hurt and now him not being able to fight once again, I feel like maybe there might even be more pressure on you now to kind of represent the country and lift the country up. Do you embrace that responsibility? I mean, you're just such a young guy. Are you okay with kind of representing an entire country and you know, putting that country on your shoulders a little bit?
I'm okay with representing the entire world. I don't care. The universe, if you want to. It's just going to be any weight on my shoulders. It's just a country lifting me up. Why should I feel pressure? No, fuck no. I don't feel pressure. I feel great. You know, I told you, like, if you think it's pressure for me, I don't care. Like, this is good for me. You know, this is a great opportunity for me, and I will embrace it that way. You know, I will take the best out of this, as always. You know, and if you're talking about my last five rounds, I mean, I feel great fighting five rounds. I feel great. You know, I just felt like I can keep on fighting. You know, and it's the way that I prepare myself every time to fight five rounds, 10 rounds. I don't care. Who cares? You know, it's what I do. It's I'm an athlete. I don't do other things. I don't have another job or whatever. I just what I do every day. And I train every day. I eat like a fighter. I train like a fighter. I sleep like a fighter. And I'm a champion, you know. Since I was a kid, I knew that I was a champion. You're different. I know I'm different. You know, I'm a different kind of animal. All the people around me know that. I know that.
That's very cool, man. I know you said you're not looking past BJ Penn at all, but you mentioned looking towards the title. Kind of an interesting place in your division right now. Do you look at Jose Aldo as a real champion? Do you think he deserves to call himself a champion right now?
To be honest, bro, I don't really need to talk about Jose Aldo because I'm not worried about what is going on in my weight class division. I don't care. Whoever's in front of me is going to be, I'm going to treat them the same way, you know. I have friends in my division, and I for sure I will have a lot of guys that are going to kick my ass. So guess what, guys? I will be prepared for you guys. So if you want to ask for a fight with me, I'm here, man. I'm here for you guys. I don't care.
Very cool. So what do you think a win here means for you, Yair? I mean, BJ Penn, a legend of the sport, no doubt about it. We don't necessarily know kind of exactly where he is. It's a little bit of a question mark, but certainly it would be a huge win on your resume. So what do you think a win here means for you and your career?
I don't know where he's going to put me this fight, you know. First of all, I have to win against a legend, you know. And he's not anymore a legend. He's a real-life bone and muscle guy in front of me, you know, trying to rip my head off. But, you know, he has a lot of experience. He's in the Wall of Fame. He knows what it takes to be a champion. And it's a very, like, really big taste for me, you know, to fight a guy who knows what it takes to be a champion, you know, to fight these kind of opponents. And it's pretty good for me. You know, it's a preparation. I saw it as a preparation, you know. I know this guy is going to be hard. It's going to be hard to, you know, to defeat, but I don't care, you know. It's what I'm here for, you know, fighting the toughest guys in the world. That's what it's the UFC for. And, you know, I will prepare the January 15th, you know, and it's going to be a good fight. It's going to be a good fight, guys. We'll see.
No doubt. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it. A great way to start the year. Any other thoughts or messages or anything that we can get out there for you, Yair?
That's it, bro. I think just say hello to all my fans, you know, out there. You know, reading this, he's gonna say, "God bless you guys. Thank you for your all of you guys' support." And I just hope you guys like the fight.
Awesome, thank you, brother. I appreciate the time. We'll see you next week in Arizona.
All right, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Yair Rodriguez in the headlining slot next week, UFC Fight Night 103 in Phoenix. Myself and Cole Coffey will be out there getting to all that, but we'll take care of that next week. Right now, we got Adam Hill. And should we just go from one superstar to another? I'm seeing it unfold right here on my screen in front of me. Norm Clark, longtime LVRJ guy. You could say he's a colleague of yours for a long time, but no longer. Now doing his own thing. He's gone on and tweeted. He is a Las Vegas media member, for those of you that don't know. He says, source, Mayweather-McGregor fight is going to happen, quote, too much money on the table. Adam, I mean, Hill,
that
hot
part's
take?
True.
Hot take?
That part's true. There is way too much money on the table. I don't know. Listen, I said on my local show when this was heating up a couple months ago that I did think it went from a 0% chance to about a 4% chance with WME-IMG.
Mm-hmm.
Because they put a lot of money in. They have a lot to make back. And it would make sense for them to be interested in something like this. I just don't know how it would be possible to make this fight happen. Like, there's so many different things. McGregor, Pacquiao, how much money was on the table for 5 years? And they couldn't make it happen.
Mayweather-Pacquiao.
Sorry. Mayweather-Pacquiao.
Of course.
And they were in the same sport.
Right.
Like, they did the same thing. And nobody was under exclusive contracts with a different sport
right. To
make it happen. So, obviously, it would be boxing. McGregor's not – or Mayweather's not – their names are too close. We need to
it is,
them.
Right?
And we're doing too many shots, I feel. Mayweather is not going to go into the UFC cage.
Of course.
There's no chance.
Never.
It's going to be boxing.
That is a zero. Like, there's right. – you can rule that out right now.
Yeah.
So never.
It's going to be boxing. So the UFC would obviously have to sign off on it on some level. They'd have to let this happen.
And they'd have to get a chunk of money because it doesn't do them any good to put their cash cow out there to lose.
To lose and to decrease his value when
he loses
comes back.
To Floyd Mayweather in boxing all day.
Of course
day,
he does.
Right?
Of course. So they need money. McGregor obviously needs a ton of money. Mayweather needs a ton of money, and he promotes everything himself. And I would imagine the UFC not only needs a fee, I think they need to be a part of the production.
It's got to be like a three-way cut,
right?
It's got to be a three-way cut.
It has to be. And so – yeah, there's a ton of money, but is Mayweather going to accept 33% of the money? Like, no way.
No way.
Like a 60 to 70% guy, and he's never accepted less than that.
Yeah. I'd say best case, he could hope for 50, and UFC and Conor split.
Right.
25 and 25.
I don't think he would even accept that. So, yes, we're talking about a ton of money, but we were with Pacquiao, too, and it took forever to do.
And, I mean, listen.
Boy, that'd have to be a pay-per-view, right?
Maybe not on Fox. You know, I did the thing the other day where, I mean, listen, you know, you talk about writing stories that you don't necessarily want to write. I mean, the other day when Dana did the scrum, making up for Ronda not being around, and Dana did say, listen, he conceded, listen, I'll never say never, but it seems highly unlikely. I ran the story. We cut the little video clip. And I know I kind of even hated doing it, but I mean, people, for whatever reason, people do care about it. But, you know, even Dana saying never say never, to me, I felt like that was just a concession that, like, okay, listen, we got to leave the door open 0.5%. But as you said, just the logistical nightmare of it makes no sense. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, listen, how would you get them, you know, how would you ever get the licenses for it? Dude, the commission would sign off on that.
Well, because the commission not only has been non-committal, they came out and said we're not licensing them. Yeah, right.
Yeah, come on, dude.
Once the applications come up, you're not going to stand in the way. And by the way, if Nevada doesn't take it,
California does.
I was going to say, it doesn't even have to be in Vegas.
Texas don't give a damn. And Cowboy Stadium.
And then, by the way, these are government agencies. They are regulatory bodies that are supposed to be there to do their job. And we can get into the Cain Velasquez situation if we wanted to. But I mean, they're there to do their job, and it would be. It would be their job to say, no, we're not sanctioning this. They shouldn't. But at the same time, they answer to the governors of their state.
And want money.
And if you turn down a fight, if their athletic commission turns down a fight, we're not taking this fight. And then Texas accepts it. And then it goes off without a hitch and everything's good. And Texas gets their, like, $25 million sanctioning fee or whatever they get, like the regulation fee. The governor of Nevada is like, wait a minute, why didn't we get this?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what we do. We're in this business. So,
yep.
While they are supposed to be there for the health and safety and really nothing else, yeah, they would have to answer that question too.
I mean, because that's a legit $20 million worth of revenue.
Of
they get
course, it would
for the commission.
And so they'd have to answer those questions. So they'd have to look at that. Even though the Bob Bennett from Nevada is on record saying absolutely not, we're not licensing them, they would.
100%.
Of course they would.
But this fight's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. I guess I'm in the boat where you are. 4% is probably enough of a little crack in
and
the door.
And that's only because of WME-IMG. I was 0% before that.
Right.
And now I'm up to that because, again, they put $4 billion. They've got to make it back.
Yep.
But they'd have to be at least equal partners with Conor. And is Conor going to sign off on that? Like, I don't know.
You never know. It's crazy. And I've seen some of the boxing things when it is like a shit show. when you see multiple promoters put an event together. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, boxing's laid it out where different promoters can make it work. But you're right. I think half of it's just getting that money split. But, you know, let's be, remember Dana said the women's division would never happen. So the fact he's saying,
and a year later,
it could happen. I'm not going to say it's no. That might as well be saying Dana saying, yes, it's going to happen. You know, but you're right. There's a lot of logistics, but, you know, nothing's off the books. When money's involved and greed and whatever, you know, as I get a lot of grief for saying whatever, but whatever, I'm not opposed to having it happen. Just the fact that I think Conor believes his boxing's that good and he's got really, really quick hands. It'd be interesting to see. Because I wouldn't mind seeing Mayweather take a couple good strong shots to the head to see how well he stands up. So you never know. Let me feed the fuel.
Shit ain't going to
happen. Let me feed it.
Shit ain't going to happen. All right. By
the way, Conor's getting big now.
He is.
And Floyd doesn't fight that high of a weight.
It's a good point,
too. Where are they fighting?
It's a good point, too.
Is Conor cutting back down to like 151? Doesn't Mayweather fight at 140? I don't follow boxing that close.
I think
he fights
right?
at 147. So is Conor going to go through this brutal weight cut to get down to 147 to fight him?
Or Floyd's just going to sign off and be like, yeah, I'm cool fighting you at like 160.
Right. And then does Conor go 160 and Floyd comes in at like 148?
Yeah, that
151 for Mayweather.
I'm sorry. To me, it is fun little conversation time, but I just don't think it happens. And to be honest, I really don't even understand the goddamn point of the whole fight anyway, man. If he steps in the UFC cage, Floyd Mayweather gets smoked.
Exactly.
Of course, if Conor steps in the boxing ring against perhaps one of the greatest tacticians of all time, he might not get knocked out, but it's not gonna look good.
Would, though.
Yeah,
yeah, I think he would.
Late,
yeah. It was. I think. I mean, Floyd. Yeah, he's a defensive fighter, but he's also. I mean, Conor's never been up against somebody like that, especially when you don't have any threat of takedown or kicks or anything. It's
right.
It's just you have to stand there and you just have to box.
Take
now,
those shots.
Now, would Conor at some point, it's a boxing match, he just throws a kick?
Just kick him anyway.
Maybe.
I mean, sorry, maybe about sorry about that. Sorry about that. My bad.
I don't know. Maybe just try to confuse him.
Shoots in for a double all of a sudden on accident. Like, my bad.
Yeah, confuse him and throw him off a little bit, I guess. But I can't believe we're doing this again. But you have to. People throw out reports like every couple of weeks, and you got to do it.
It would be funny.
The
like,
dude has an eye patch. How can you discount what he's
wow.
doing?
Norm is a legend in the city. There's no doubt about it. He's got great sources. But at the same time, you know, it was only in July that Colin Cowherd from Fox Sports 1 reported it was a done deal and the fight was signed, which was...
He already had his tickets, right?
He had his tickets, which is completely insane. But listen, again, what is Floyd Mayweather doing right now? Nothing. What is Conor McGregor doing right now? Nothing. And they're in the headlines. So they're brilliant.
Brilliant.
They can keep this going, but I don't think it's going to happen. And listen, you can all play this audio back when I say it's not going to happen when I'm waiting to cover the fight on some night at MGM or T-Mobile Arena.
Hard to get ticket right there.
Remember you said this, and you guys can play the cut, but I just don't think it can happen.
I agree. All right, so since we were all going to be getting together and there was no event this week, I reached out to Twitter and said, hey, do you got any questions that you might want to ask? With myself, Colt Coffee, and Adam Hill. So let's just burn through these real quick while we're sitting here having a frosty beverage at the Boomer Studio here in Las Vegas. All right, first question. Morgan Waltz writes in, says, listen, free agency, what's going to happen? I'll throw out a couple of names here and just see if you got any strong feelings on this. He says, what's going to happen or where do you want them? Ryan Bader, Marlon Moraes, Justin Gaethje, Lorenz Larkin, Jake Shields. Do any of those stand out to you as something you feel strong about or that you want to see happen with any of them?
Yeah, Gaethje. I really want him in the UFC. I mean, that's... Oh,
no!
You
I'm
know,
saying
you know
his the way he fights is so crazy, man. That dude is must watch TV to me.
I love it, and I think him is he's such a nice, like unassuming. You would never know. I'm trying to remember where I told the story last week. I think it was on a different podcast. Sorry, guys.
What? Another podcast.
That I was actually at like it was on a UFC road trip somewhere, and I was at. Somebody's hotel just hanging out, and one of you guys even might have been there.
Right.
And Justin Gaethje is sitting next to me, and I'm talking to him about fights. And then it dawned on me, like, oh, you're Justin Gaethje. I didn't even realize
it. Like, it was just a group of people.
Yeah,
he thought I was
kind of
like talking
to
him. He's
just sitting there with his glasses and just like having a drink.
Oh, he's incredibly unassuming.
Yeah. Oh, you would have no idea. And I was like, oh my, like, what am I telling you? Like, you know what. But he's, he's there and he's like interested in what I'm saying. Well, I felt like I'd had a lot of drinks, so I don't know. Maybe he just was pretending. But no, he's just a really good kid. But then he gets in the cage, you're like, where did this come from?
Right.
I think he could be a potential megastar. And, of course, he can really fight. I mean, I really want to see him in the UFC. I think that would be great. And, of course, Moraes, too. I mean, that guy is good. He's got a lot of talent. A guy like Shields, like, of course we're interested in seeing him, but I'm not like clamoring like I am for Gaethje to get, you know, get back in the UFC or get big fight somewhere. That's the one. It's just a Gaethje to me.
I agree. You know, I'm interested with Ryan Bader just because, like, I think Ryan is incredibly undervalued and underranked.
He is, but he's so capped.
I agree.
He's like, so capped at where he can go.
That's what I think. I mean, what, you bring him in to fight Phil Davis or something? I mean, yeah. Seriously, what would Bader Davis, what does that do for Bellator?
Nothing.
So I don't understand. I don't think that would do anything good. Larkin, I love Larkin, but man, I think we pulled up before. I remember talking to this. I feel like last time out, he made like 75 and 75. That's a lot of money, man.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money for Bellator to take under their wings. Not that dude, when he's on point, he's on point. But I don't know if he's 150 on point.
Free agency doesn't necessarily mean you leave either. So I would like to see Lorenz Larkin resign.
I do too.
Get a good deal and see if he can make a run. I think he can.
I agree. He looked amazing last time out. Yeah, I'd like to see. And no offense to the World Series of Fighting. Gaethje's a beast. Marais, dude, I think Marais as well, man. I mean, but the thing is right now, I don't think the UFC is in real need of anything at bantamweight right now. They got something fun happening at bantamweight right now. They could probably wait another 6 or 8 months or a year to even bring Marais in. And truthfully, for Marais, maybe it wouldn't be a bad deal to sign another two fights in the World Series because I think he makes like 100 and 100 or something like that.
Wow.
Dude, you're not going to get that from the UFC. And if you're not in line for a title shot right now anyway, because you got to let that whole, triumvirate up there take care of itself, I think if you're Marlon, maybe you try to re-sign for like two more fights and just kind of stick around, take what you can.
Makes sense to me.
But Gaethje, dude, the way he fights, man, that dude ain't going to be fighting much longer, right? I mean, you got to go in and get you in the UFC while you can.
And he is relentless.
Yeah.
He is relentless.
That fight with Luis Firmino.
Yeah, that was.
Oh my god, that was fun.
Yeah, boy, they beat the shit out of each other. His opponent was messed up.
It really did.
He's a lot of fun. Out of that list, he's the one. I think he's the one. If I had to pick one of who I'd love to see over in the UFC, is him. But you're right. I mean, right now, I mean, he's king of the roost over there. I mean, I think he's in a good spot. I think he's going to find a lot more people on his level if he comes back. If he comes to the UFC, but I think he also he would immediately put himself in the top five easily. Just I think by the get go of just coming over, but he's in a good spot. But I mean, I would love to see him come over to see how he handles and see him mow through some of the division over there, so he can sort of justify what's been going on. I think a lot of people look and say, "Oh, well, who has he fought? Dude's fought some dudes, you know." And I think if he comes over to the UFC, he'll do probably the same thing with most of the guys he runs into there, but.
By the way, she just should mention Jerome walked in the door. He's got a little. Looks like he's got a bottle of something
little,
there. That
I don't know.
I don't think you're supposed to open those up
bag.
In the. We'll find out.
If they have bottle service or bottle fees here.
We'll see what's up. All right, listen, you two guys. I'll have to lean to you guys on this one because I don't know. John Paul writes, any idea of Ricky Lundell's presence in Ronda's camp? To be honest with you, man, it's been a long time since I've talked to Ricky.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, he was a part of that as they were organizing, getting together. Did you guys have any conversation with him about how much involvement he had or what role he had?
No, I haven't seen him. I think I'm in the same boat as you, and maybe Adam has more. I mean, I knew he was when I think she was testing – not testing the waters, but the early prep. I know that they were working out and working on some stuff, wrestling and a lot of other stuff. You know, she's not going to go to him for striking or anything like that. Yeah. I think she wanted to kind of – was probably working fitness and probably working in some things. And then I don't know if it got to a point where they were just like, all right, we don't need you right now. But I know that part of that was also kind of working while Travis was in prep for his camp as well. So I don't know if that relationship sort of just kind of went their own way. I'm sure he's still around.
I forgot to ask her this at Media Day. So I think next time, I was going to ask her how much Ricky
like,
Lindell had
wait,
to do with
wait,
her camp.
When did you?
I was going to ask her, but I just forgot.
Totally forgot. You spaced on that one. That's on your shoulders, bro. You have to live with that one for a
bad
long
reporter.
Time. All right, John Paul also wrote in, he's got another news. Who will be the biggest pay-per-view draws during 2017, considering the majority are out for a while? And I'll tell you what, this is an interesting question to me because the first half of this year, I think it's going to be a real interesting stretch for WME IMG because, man, you know, you got Connor out, who doesn't sound like he's probably going to be out as long as we thought he was, but still going to be out for at least, what, the first 3 or 4 months? Maybe
I would
see
say
him by
Memorial Day card. Yeah.
Maybe see him by Memorial
Prepping
Day.
For that boxing
Can't
match.
Have John Jones. Can't have John Jones till summer. Looks like Cyborg's out all year. you know, you can kind of go through the list of the injuries and those sort of things. Ronda, of course, man, maybe at the end of the year, maybe not at all. So if you guys had to point to some names that you think would be the biggest draws of 2017, what do you think?
I mean, I still think it's going to be Connor because I do think he's going to be back. I think it'll be Memorial Day. I think he'll do one in the summer and then probably one in the fall. I think he'll
start. Well, he might still get in three fights.
Yeah, I think he'll still get three in. So it's going to be Connor McGregor. But I think the other one is, I know that they absolutely love Cody Garbrandt, and they think from talking to people, one of the things that they're doing, and I know people are getting annoyed that it's not merit based anymore, that it's all about Hollywood appeal and all this stuff, but. Listen, WMEIMG is a Hollywood company. They know what they're doing, and I think they have run the – I don't know how much people know about Q ratings. They have done Q ratings on everyone, and from what I understand from talking to people, Cody Garbrandt tests off the charts.
That's
awesome. And they think that he is going to be a mega, mega superstar. So I don't know how much how much he gained from – I'm sure he gained a ton from being having a great performance on a card where everybody's watching Ronda Rousey – and Cody Garbrandt all of a sudden becomes the star. I don't know if it translates immediately to pay-per-view buys, but I think he's going to be a mega, mega star if he can put on another great performance like that in his next fight, which will probably be a headlining role. I think he goes through the roof this year.
I agree, man. I've heard all the same things that you've heard, man, that it sounds like, dude, they're about to put their push behind him.
Yeah.
Because and rightfully so. I mean, dude, that performance he turned in the other night, I mean, not only did he do it impressively just fight-wise, but when you're in there dancing and doing push-ups and, I mean, like – you're doing all that. Then on top of that, you've got the look, dude. Come on, man. I mean,
the story.
You got the story of the background. You've got the you've got the heart wrenching, tale with Maddox, man. Literally, that dude is a complete package. And man, Adam, man, you took the words right out of my mouth. I think that dude's gonna blow up huge this year.
Yeah. I think it's the year of Cody Garbrandt. But then again, this sport is so crazy. He could lose.
Still shot
his next
fight,
and then all of a sudden, okay, now who's the next guy?
Now who's
move
next?
On to the next one.
You're right.
That's going to be – I'll tell you what's funny is that's going to be the important lesson for the crew at WMEIMG when they learn that lesson, because it is a lesson in the fight game. Yes, you need to seize opportunities like this. Like when you see, oh, my gosh, we've got somebody here, hell, yeah, you need to seize the opportunity. But you damn sure better keep a few chips back here, push somewhere else.
And you think you're WMEIMG, you're like, okay, we've got Connor. This is great. Wait, he's having a kid? Wait, we just bought this company. What do you mean you're having a kid? And then, Ronda, oh, she's coming back. Wait, she got knocked down before. What are we doing with this thing? It is lessons that you learn and you move on from it. But, new stars always emerge. And, by the way, if you're looking at single biggest number, I can't wait to see. And if we get it in this, we've thought it happened 8 times. What does Cormier John Jones do if they finally? I mean, we've been waiting for this fight for so long. In the MMA bubble in the world, we've been waiting so long. But has it gotten stale for the average fan? Do they get that mainstream number when John and Cormier finally fight? Do people get the fact that this fight has been being built for 3 years? I'm interested in seeing that, too.
It's a big one.
It's true.
Any names stand out for you?
Michael Bisping. No, I'm just
get
kidding.
Get out of here.
I know. I was just kidding. There's a couple favorites. I think anything, it's the year of the underdog. Maybe we're going to get a name. I don't want to say underdog because one person that's rising in the top of my head and a lot of that kind of – weighs upon how the fight goes with Woodley. I think Stephen Thompson. I think he is a candidate to really blow up.
If he gets that win,
that's a guy I could see really,
fun fighting
really
style, well spoken, young,
good
energetic.
Looking dude. He's got a super, super
teaches
exciting
the kids
style.
Back home.
Yeah, I mean he's a guy. I mean I'd love to see Joanna Champion kind of blow up more. I mean I think with the way that she kind of works things and her cute little mannerisms that she does that everybody loves watching, and she just is a badass as well. I think she has all the makings to become something. So, outside of those other ones, I think it's just like with Cody, he was like the underdog that took down the big dog. I think it's the year of, I don't want to call them underdogs, but I think there's some people right underneath the level that are going to make some breakthroughs this year, and those are going to be the ones that halfway through the year we're like, holy shit, I had no idea who this person, or I didn't expect this person. I think it's going to be somebody different outside of the top than the regular, usual candidates.
Yeah,
but
if Wonderboy could win a title, he could break through. All right, Chris Emanuel writes, could you talk about this money weight phenomenon? Fighters win a belt and all of a sudden want to take on another divisional champion rather than fight their own peers. This week alone, we've heard of Bisping versus Woodley, Cody versus Aldo O'Connor. Do you think this is just an evolution of MMA, or do you think this devalues the weight classes, creates log jams, and more pointless interim titles?
all of that.
Yeah, I think it does. But I mean, it also makes sense in that.
Makes sense.
You know, yep. you have to strike while the iron's hot. And we heard Tyron Woodley talk about it when he won the title. He's like, all right, now I'm the champion. Now it's time to make my money. And it's true. Listen, if when we talk about what fighters make and what salaries are and all these other things in the sport, I don't blame fighters at all for when you have some leverage, when you have the belt, you better look around and find the biggest payday you can possibly
100%.
Make. 100%. Like, yep. That's your time. You get your share of the pay-per-view. You get, you know, all these other perks that come with being a champion. And one of those is trying to find the best fight for you that makes the most sense and keeping the title longest and making the most money while you can. So I don't have a problem with it. I think it does all those things that you mentioned. You create interim titles, log jams, all those other things. But are you really going to get mad at fighters for trying to make the most out of their title run?
That's it.
Like, you can't get mad at them for that. That's what they should be doing.
I agree. It's weird because, you know, you look at featherweight, especially right now, like Aldo, is he a legitimate champion? Holloway, I mean, is incredible of a run he's on. I mean, an interim belt. I mean, what does it mean? It does. All those problems are legitimate bitches, man. They really are. But as you said, man, when they had that moment, I mean, we're always talking about these guys getting the biggest opportunity they can and cashing in on it. And sometimes that's going to mean stepping outside of your division, like whatever the fight is that people are willing to pay to see, right?
Yeah, I think for sure. Like, look at a guy like, you know, Woodley, who just fought Thompson. He saw how hard that fight was. All right, let's look around. Who can I maybe have a better chance against in a rematch? You know, not that he can't beat Woodley, but I think I'd rather match up with Bisping at this point than I would with Stephen Thompson. Yeah. And it's probably more money. And you can sell the whole champion versus champion thing. Versus all those other things. It makes you more money. Maybe, I'm not saying it's an easier fight, but maybe you have more likely chance to win. So I think for all those reasons, like, how can you blame a guy in a case like that?
I agree. All right, Joe from H-Town, who literally listens to every MMA podcast out there. Literally. He said, how about fighters now unwilling to do UFC favors without getting compensated like in the past?
Good.
And then he puts a hashtag $4 billion.
Exactly. By the way, can we first start with Houston sucks, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, 100%.
It's awful. It's an awful place.
It's terrible.
It really is terrible. We travel. You guys travel more than I do, but I'm on the road quite a bit, and Houston is just baffling
to me.
You're
going to have to be in Houston here.
I was just saying that because I'm a Dallas guy. So I can poop
Houston,
on Houston.
They're
going to
be waiting for you
when
you get off the airport.
Houston, seriously, I did the Final Four there last year, and we were there for Radio Row. We talked to the mayor, and the mayor said, our goal for 2016 is to double our population in downtown.
That's insane.
And Houston's a major city, right?
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah,
are you going to double? He said, yes. We have 3,000 people living downtown. That's it. And I was blown away by that.
That is such a small
And they wanted to get
number.
To 6,000. But when you go there, nothing's open downtown ever. There's like two bars open with all the hotels. They have conventions and everything going on. And you can't find like a bar open except that one little area. There's a Mexican restaurant next to the Hilton. That's it.
Wow.
That's like it. And then there's like
I know exactly the Mexican restaurant you're talking about.
It's good.
Too.
It's like it. But like, you can go there every night. Like, come on, let's build the downtown up so it's a better city. Whatever. We have to go there for a lot of events. So I'm just saying, Houston, I didn't like Houston. It's too spread out. There's too much stuff going on. But, yes, I'm all fighters. Listen, again, going back to what we said, strike while the iron's hot. They need you. Yes. If you want to be a company man, I get all that stuff. Maybe you'll get favors down the road. But you can't be assured of that. So if they want you to step in on late notice, okay, yeah, fine, I will. You're paying me for it.
Yeah.
And get your compensation
for it. Well, here's the only thing that does concern me a little bit is that I think a lot of the fighters right now don't – I'm not saying they don't understand it, but maybe they're not necessarily considering it. Like, WMEIMG did not get $4 billion. Like, they paid for
right,
it. Really.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So, like, if you want to collect on your money, like, go hit up Lorenzo Fertitta out on his boat somewhere, right? I mean, these guys are trying to cut costs and make up that money that they lost.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a good point. But at the same time, and I think that a lot of people don't understand that. I think that's a good point to point that out. But at the same time, they saw that this company was worth that much because of the fighters.
That's a good point.
And if WMEIMG thinks that the company is worth $4 billion because the fighters can produce that much money, then the fighters should be getting a bigger share of that, and they should understand that their value is higher than that. And listen, I know from a business perspective, and you know, that they felt, hey, this company has kept salaries way down here while profits went way up here. That's a good company to buy. But now, when this has gone public and everybody knows you paid $4 billion, and, oh, wait, that's how much the company's worth? Oh, because our salaries are way down here? Yeah, they should come up here. And then you got that struggle of, well, we paid $4 billion because the salaries were so low.
Yeah, we were like, wow, there's
but
huge opportunity because y'all don't make shit.
Yeah, so it's very difficult. And with unionization potentially coming and all those other things on the horizon, It's going to get weird and ugly. And by the way, with essentially Dana White's salary being tied into how low he can keep fighter salaries, yeah. And he's the one that negotiates a lot of them because he makes a percentage of revenue or a profit, excuse
right.
me. So, yeah, how much – whatever he can keep the salaries at – that's how the profits will be higher and his salary will be higher. Not that, you know, not that he's hurting or would
right.
would keep a guy's salary lower to make more money, but the appearance of it is out there as well.
If your money's tied into it, wouldn't
of
you?
Of course.
Wouldn't you think about it?
Of course.
Speaking of, I guess we should say, Zuffa, while we're recording this, a handful of select individuals or people are at the JW Marriott in Desert Springs doing a big WME IMG thing. I saw Tony Robbins was speaking to him this morning and or yesterday or I don't know. They got
I saw some Snapchats.
They got
there.
Stuff going on. Did you see some Snapchats?
Yeah, I did. I got some snaps from down there.
They got some stuff going on out there.
That's about it. Seen some team building and Instagram, lots of Instagram and social media pics. They seem to be having a decent enough time, so hopefully they're I don't know, maybe they're all drinking the Kool-Aid down there
get
and realizing they got
being
yeah.
built back up.
We're doing good things, guys. This is how we need you to do it type thing. So who knows? It'd be interesting to talk to some of those cats. You know, I heard of some of the heads of production are down there, you know, as well as some heads in other operations and other groups down there. So it'd be interesting to see. But, yeah, it's probably I know things have changed. This is how you need to kind of keep your troops happy type thing. This is how we do stuff. And welcome to the team type thing, you know. I don't know. Who knows?
All right.
You're the select few that weren't laid off, so we're going to bring you in to enjoy.
There must be some value.
I know it must have hurt letting your people go. Here, let's go meet out in the woods and all sing fucking Kumbaya.
There's no woods in Palm Springs.
I don't know what the fuck it is.
It's the exact
opposite. I assume they're all playing paintball and, like, doing the what is it, where they stand behind them and they have to fall over and they catch them?
The trust games?
The trust games. Yeah. Except Zuffa, now they're like, sorry, we let your ass fall and hit the ground.
You better learn what happens when you trust somebody.
How dare you think this was still a family.
So wrong. All right, well, listen, it's been kind of a reset button this week for 2017. We're getting ready for the new year, so it's been fun with no event. It's kind of a more of a low-key week, so a little bit easier. We'll pick things back up, and then it gets very busy right away. I know Cole Coffey and I are going to head out to Phoenix. Adam, you heading out there? That's
I will
closer.
Be there. Yes,
and then I guess we'll see you in L.A.
Phoenix
as well
and then
for Bellator.
Yeah.
And
a full month.
What about you going to do Denver, too? That's not that far.
I will
far.
Not be in Denver.
No?
No, I will not be in Denver.
Football going on that week or something?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I had something going on.
Okay.
I have something going on that I'm not going to be there. But, yeah, Phoenix and L.A., that should be a good
He's
time.
A busy man, Morgan. He's a busy man.
I am, for sure.
So we'll get to see a lot of Adam Hill. So, Adam, thank you very much for stopping by and having a few cocktails with us.
Thank you, guys.
Of course, we always enjoy that. Cold coffee.
Do
Thanks
enjoy
for crawling your ass off the couch.
Yeah, man. The whole 3 minutes. It took me 3 minutes to drive over here. You all should be very grateful that don't.
I'm anxious to see what Jerome brought in over here. He's,
yes.
He's got something wrapped up in that bag over
I like
there.
It, yeah. If he's coming out to join with the road show, you know, we got to do some drinks with him.
We better have a beverage or two. So we'll wrap all this stuff up, and we'll get back to big business next week. In the meantime, let me just tell everybody, thanks for listening.
There you go. Finish that shot like a man of that nice peppermint whiskey shot. Cinnamon. Take your cinnamon whiskey shot like a man.
Push that umbrella to the side and drink that drink up.
That's right. Hold the pinky up. Let's do this.
All right, rolling?
We're rolling.